the new episode of Three Slow Guys Running Marathons. I'm here with my really great friend, Tim Cashman, and we are going to be running the Boston Marathon together next week, Monday, April 15th in Boston. As of the day we're recording this, is Sunday, April 7th. So we have a little less than a week to go.
A little over a week, eight days. but who's counting?
Oh, man. This is, I only started getting into running myself maybe 2008-ish, so, you know, 15 years ago-ish, a little over 15 years. But ever since then, this has been one of my dreams to do this race. So I know, Tim, you've done this race. You probably started running a little bit before I did. Maybe you can kind of tell me what this race means to you, that you've done it before, and also how do you feel about doing this race coming up?
I think I am just, it's Boston. So, you know, when I first started running and then I decided to try a marathon, and Boston was always the one to aspire to, because it's the oldest continuous marathon in the world, I believe. But it's always the one that people, you know, as a marathoner, you strive for. It's, you know, the Super Bowl of marathons. And even if you're not an elite runner, the qualifying times are very challenging, to which I probably, unless some sort of slight miracle happens, qualifying for Boston is not in the cards for me. So I am fortunate enough to work with a charity called Race for Rehab. And I was fortunate enough to get involved with them a few years ago and ran the 2022 Boston Marathon. So this one coming will be, I'm sort of pinching myself saying this, Brian. This is my second Boston Marathon. So it's a little surreal to be saying that, but I am, I think this time around, getting to experience it with you, you know, we've been friends for over 30 years and, you know, both of us have been running for, you know, 15 plus years. We've done, you know, over 15, this will be my 17th marathon. I think you're up to 18 or 19. So I'm just thrilled that we have this opportunity to run Boston, in just a little over a week.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm definitely excited. And for all those, we didn't qualify on time. So, you know, I know that would aspire. I would love to aspire to, but you know, with our age group, Tim, we're in the 45 to 49 range, and we'd honestly have to be running like a three. Well, the cutoff is 3:20 for us, but we'd have to beat that by at least 5 minutes. So you're looking at a 3:15, and I don't think that's in our, you know, knock on wood. That's not something that's, I don't know, never, but I don't know if I'll ever meet that time goal, but who knows? Who knows? Okay. So Tim, I know you've done this race before, mm-hmm. but maybe we could just kind of go over into the training part of it we can talk a little bit about, you know, the race itself, but you know, you and I have been planning this out. We usually do follow like maybe a 18 to 20 week type of program. And so maybe we can kind of just talk about how you're training has been going since we started training probably in January-ish. Mm-hmm. How's that been going for you? Ups and downs, what worked and what didn't work, and you know, maybe you can kind of go through that.
Well, fortunately, I've had a lot more ups than downs, and I think what I am focused on this time around is I've been focusing a lot more on strength training. I would say, you know, not a tremendous amount, but adding that into my training regimen. Boston is known for its hills, both uphill and downhill. And that is what actually clobbered me pretty well the first time I ran it, was the downhills and how much punishment my legs, particularly my quads, were taking. So I made a focus to work on, you know, as I said, strength training in my legs, doing some hill workouts around where I live. Also focusing on my form, particularly on downhills. I've been working with a coach, and the guidance has been, you know, don't lean back, lean forward. Try to lead with your ankles, which if you're thinking that, you're less prone to lead back, but shorten your stride to reduce that kind of punishment on your legs. So that, nutrition has been important. Now that we're in tapering, nutrition is very important on that, hydration. And I think this time around, Brian, one of my weaknesses in the marathon, at least the last, I'd say two, probably three marathons, is I have been hitting the wall, worse than I think I had earlier in my running career. So fueling is going to be a big part of how I approach this race. I'm actually going to try to do a little bit more fueling this time around with gels, with salt tabs, because in CIM, I got a little lightheaded, and I'm attributing that to just not having as much, needing to rethink my fueling strategy there. Fortunately, no injuries. One run where I got a little, sick, but that has been the only hiccup over, it's 16, 17 weeks. So pretty fortunate in that regard. And yeah, everything's right now, just got to get to Monday.
Yeah. Okay. I got a couple of questions for you that you brought those things up. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about first more the training that you're doing, the strength training, because mm-hmm. I know for runners, that's, if you're not like a seasoned runner, and it's easy to fall into the trap of just running and thinking that is going to solve your entire, fitness regimen. And you and I both know that that's not, you could do a little bit better if you wanted to work on your whole body. So you talked about strength training, and that's something you're really concentrating on. Can you kind of talk about that a little bit more, like in terms of like, the legs, mm-hmm. Things like that?
Yeah. So I'm doing basically two kinds of workouts that are focusing both on core and on my legs. The core workouts are just, obliques, making sure that, at some point you're going to start maybe leaning forward a little bit. And so the whole point is to make you a lot more efficient as a runner. So if you have that strength, that is going to lead not necessarily faster, but that a more efficient runner. Legs, what I've found is I'm finding it better for injury prevention, particularly in some of my the ligaments around my knee. I just felt, prior to strength training, I felt some weakness, some pulls, and doing that kind of leg strength training, doing lunges, doing step ups where I have a weight bench in front of me, and I step up to that. And doing upper side lunges, calf raises, things like that, that has actually dissipated a lot of the weakness. I haven't had any discomfort in my legs or my knees, so knock on wood. So I would attribute that to the strength training, which I'm doing twice a week in addition to my weekly running schedule.
I'm reminded of like Steph Curry, because it's weird sometimes to equate basketball into this, but
are you comparing me to Steph Curry? I'm a little out of his category, but go ahead.
Early in his career, he'd always get some ankle injuries. I don't know if you remember that, but he would always seem to be injury prone, and it was like his ankles or his leg, somewhere in his lower leg. And I think he started working on his balance. And, that included probably some of the things that you've been talking about, doing lunges and like doing balancing work on the legs. And that's something that I've actually been trying to do a little bit more also. And to follow your lead a little bit, because I had a really difficult time in CIM, as you know. I bonked like crazy. And I attributed that probably because I ran a little bit too much last year in terms of how many races I had done. So I bonked. I think my quads were killing me. Just everything was just too much. But I did heed your advice and try something new for strength training. So myself, I decided to give Orange Theory a chance. And Orange Theory, I think, has been great. It's been... for those who don't use that program, they're generally known for being like, it's called a 2G or a 3G process, where 2G is you're splitting your basic 1 hour class into two segments. And the first part is either running, and the second part is strength training. And the strength training could be anything from lower legs to balance work to arms to chest, anything of like that. And it kind of does a rotation depending on the class you take. And the running part is also kind of a rotation, but you and I also do, interval workouts together, but this is kind of like a condensed version of an interval workout within a 20 to 25 minute period. So you're probably only going to get about 2 miles worth of running, but you are going to fluctuate in terms of elevation and also like speed and distance. So I feel like you can run faster on a treadmill, but it's not going to very simulate the experience that you do of running like on a track or up a hill like that you're doing, you know, for your interval workouts in real life. So that's what I've been kind of doing. And I've noticed that it also is strengthening kind of the areas around your leg, like the IT band and, and like the calves and the quads, like all those things can definitely be more helpful. So, but yeah, I would recommend it, or any sort of like class like that. But definitely, I didn't really start working on my legs in terms of like strength training until very recently. And that's probably something I could have done better upon, you know, in the past. So, okay. What about the fueling part? You talked about the fueling. Mm-hmm. You said about the, I know you use Martin's, that gel. But talk about the salt tabs things. Because I've heard of it, but I've seen people do it, but I've never actually done it myself. So maybe you can kind of talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. So I have started using these things called, they're called salt chews, and they're basically just electrolytes. And they just, it's like, you know, any just chewable little tablet that, you know, you've had from, you know, this is just a chewable tablet. But what I was finding out, particularly in CIM, was, you know, I was grabbing the electrolyte drinks. And I mean, I suspect, but maybe I don't know how much truth there is to this, was I wasn't getting enough electrolytes. And so by the time I hit, you know, 19, 20, 21, I just started getting lightheaded, and it started to get a little bit warm. And the only culprit I could think of is, you know, I was during my training, I was drinking Gatorade or Gatorade Endurance, and I felt fine. So maybe in those cases, the mix of the electrolytes in CIM wasn't what my body needed. So I've started using these salt chews, and I'm gonna take them on. And I took them on a half marathon I ran recently, the DC Rock and Roll Half Marathon, and then a 10K before that. And my body's responded well to them. In addition to that, taking Morton's a little bit more frequently, I usually take them about once every 4 miles. I'm actually now doing that once every 3 or once every 30 minutes. So that's more that I have to carry, but my body's responding to it. So that's the strategy I'm going to employ in Boston. And hopefully, knock on wood, that's going to make a difference where those last few tough miles, Heartbreak Hill, and then down in the Brookline to finish, you know, I'm not fighting, much. I mean, I know we're going to be all rerunning on fumes, but, hopefully not as what I experienced in, at CIM and then, Big Sur and then New York City Marathon prior to that.
So you'll be carrying eight Martins.
Well,
with you?
Here's what I'm going to do. And this is, I'm going to carry around 4 or 5, but they have Morton's gel stations, throughout Boston. So I'm going to, hopefully give myself a break, and not carry that much and then just grab them along the way.
I forgot. I use Morton's too, as you know, and I didn't realize that they were going to be on the course until you just said, and now I see it on the map that they're there. Like I see they're mile 12, mile 17, and right after Heartbreak Hill, or I don't know if this is during or after, but at mile 21.
That will be just after Heartbreak.
Okay. So I see your strategy here. And then the salt, these salt chews, are they like a gummy? Is it like a gummy type of thing, or is it an
No,
actual?
it's honestly the best comparison I have is maybe to like a Tums. You just chew it up and then take a little bit of water and down it goes. So, but they're very lightweight, so I can carry multiple salt chews with me.
See, I never really got into doing actual salt, but I, 'cause I always like carrying like almonds that are salted, that type of thing, or maybe like some sort of granola bar that has some salt in it. But maybe I should give this a go. And I know it's kind of late in the game for me to introduce this, but maybe just a little bit. Maybe I'll get something this week to kind of think about that. All right. Well, let's talk about the actual course itself. So, you're flying into Boston on what day again, Tim?
Friday morning. Friday
Friday morning.
morning.
Okay. I'll be there Saturday afternoonish. And then normally, where do you normally stay in the, well, where are you staying now? And is that,
Normally,
yeah,
so
normally. It sounds like
well, yeah,
you've done this race so many times,
I you're
so.
right, exactly. I've done it once, so I don't know if that's if that's really trend worthy. But I'm going to be staying out at the Marriott in Waltham, Massachusetts. It's close enough to the city. It's a short Uber ride, but I'm also just far enough away that I'm not having to deal with the Boston hotels, which tend to get a little pricey around marathon weekend. There might be some price gouging. That's just a small suspicion,
It's
but
just a little bit.
yeah, a little bit.
I am actually going to be staying in Cambridge, and I arrive on Saturday, but I chose that on purpose because I hadn't been to Boston in a while. So yes, I probably could have been a little further out, maybe Newton or near BC or Boston College or somewhere around there, but I decided to stay closer to the town just because I haven't been there in maybe 10 years, over 10 years. So and then logistics wise, the expo is going to be at the Heinz Convention Center, right? Is
Heinz
that where?
Convention Center, yeah, which
Okay.
is going to be very close to it's right on Boylston Street, which is of course where the marathon ends. So it's nice to to get there. You'll see the finish line all set up, and then the expo happens right inside the Heinz Convention Center, as you said.
Cool. And then normally, I guess you would take the bus, right, from the Boston Commons.
Boston Common, yeah.
Yeah, okay. And out to the start line. So remind me, the start line is in what city?
Hopkinton.
Hopkinton. Okay. Anything of note in that area besides it being the Boston Marathon start?
I mean, you are well away from Boston. I think what I noticed about Hopkinton, one, it was like an hour bus ride from the Boston Common. I mean, I don't know how slow that bus was going, but we were on there for an hour. And the other thing was, I think two other things. Actually, no, three other things. One, the time I got to the Athletes Village until the time that it was time to line up just seemed to fly by. It just seemed like I got there, I sat down, I was eating, and then next thing I know, okay, it's time to line up. And you have to walk from Hopkinton High School, which is the Athletes Village, to the start line, which is a little over half a mile, actually. But as you're walking, down to the start line on the neighbor, you're walking through a regular neighborhood and everybody's out and they're encouraging you, they're wishing you good luck, they're all having little block parties and so forth. But then the third thing was you're lining up, and then I realized that it's just how small that road is, the initial starting point. It's just a two-lane road. And I was like, wow, it's just I think I had envisioned Boston as being so massive, and it is, but the first part is just like, boy, there's not much room around here. And then, of course, I felt incredibly self-conscious because I'm looking at all these amazing runners and I'm looking at their physiques going, God, what do you do? How do you look like that? That's just, what are you eating that I'm not eating? So
Oh
it's
my
just,
gosh.
I will say, I felt a little self-conscious, Brian. Stay at lining up, like, but that was quickly dissipated by like, oh my God, I'm actually at the start line of the Boston Marathon.
That's
So,
funny. That's funny. We got those singlets and I'm thinking, "Oh man, I don't know if I look good in the singlet."
because it's all about how you look.
I'm a little on the skinny side, so I just don't think I would look I just don't, I don't know. I just don't feel like I have the physique for a singlet. I know what you mean. So you were talking about the road. So it's a two, is it two lanes all the way from Hopkinton all the way out to Boston and kind of like it?
No,
No.
it will get wider as the race goes on. And then, just like any race, the first, mile or maybe mile and a half, it's a little packed. But after that, it starts spreading out. People who are going to go fast are going to go fast, and people who are, like me are going to just, go into my conservative pace. I will say that the start is you start going downhill. So combined with the fact that it's Boston, the fact there's a lot of fast runners around you, and that your adrenaline and heart rate are just going through the roof, it is really easy to come storming out of the gates. So I just my recommendation, like any races, they always say, don't go out too fast. Don't go out too fast. I think it's doubly important for Boston to just keep telling yourself that, because I think I launched myself down. I'm like, I'm going at an 8:45 pace. That's not good. I need to slow down.
Okay. And then you mentioned also about the time kind of flying by
Yeah.
when you get there. And I know I've done New York with you once, and I remember it. We waited there for a long time because
Right.
they're shipping you out there super early. But it seems like because we're you and I are in wave four, so we're towards the back. We're taking a later bus in, and our start. So if we leave at 9 from the Boston Common, get there around 10, we only have like an hour, right? Until okay, that's interesting. But I remember in New York, we're waiting around for like 3 hours. It felt forever.
Yeah, so Boston does something different. I mean, New York, it's everybody gets on the bus at pretty much the same time. And so if you're lucky, you're going out in the earlier waves. Boston, they actually stagger you at the Boston Common. They will only allow wave one or wave two runners to go first, and then by the time we're able to go, which I think is just at 9 o'clock in the morning, that's when they start letting the wave four runners in. And so it does limit your time out at the Athletes Village.
I see. Okay. And now, since you are staying, I think, in Waltham, right? Are you planning to take like an Uber or like a bus, do the start line? I mean, to the finish line to get on the
Yeah, so
bus? Is that how that works?
so I'm gonna Uber over in the morning. I'll drop off my my bag for my for my post-race gear. And then hopefully meet up with you and Missy. We'll see if if we can meet each other in the throughout all the masses of runners. And then yeah, get on the bus and out to Hopkinton we go.
Okay. And we don't have to go over every single point on the race now because we'll probably do that in detail a little further on. But I did notice that within the first 4 miles, there's like an elevation drop of about 200 feet. And I guess that's why you're saying you can it's easy to go faster. Kind of that time. Okay. And then it looks like it's pretty consistent up until mile 15 in Wellesley, where it looks like it's going to drop from 200 down to almost sea level. Like, is there's a big hill
That's
that's.
a big drop, and that's as I said it earlier, when I ran Boston the first time, it wasn't so much the hills, although they're obviously very challenging. The uphills that were, were tough. It was the downhills that did the most damage to me, to the point where I got to Newton and I was just like, I haven't hit a hill yet. But because I've been running so fast on the downhills, my quads had just taken such a beating. So that's why it's very important when you're going down those first hill, when you're doing the downhills, particularly that one in Wellesley, it has such a steep drop. Really shorten your stride. Make sure you're not feeling that pounding on your legs. You want to try to limit that as much as possible because you've got the infamous Newton Hills right after that.
So when you're running, your strategy when you're running downhill, you're leaning, are you leaning back just a little bit? So
Actually, no. I'm trying to do what's so I what I say is ankles first, which pushes me to lean forward just a little bit. But between that and shortening my stride, really focusing on shortening my stride, I'm basically letting gravity do its work. So there's less punishment on my body because I'm not, pushing myself. I'm just basically being pulled down the hill. And what I found is that is just less taxing than, charging down a hill, huge strides where you're just, your feet is hitting the pavement, and it's, you can hear that, you can just feel, that boom, boom, boom against your quads. That's what you want to avoid.
Right, I get it. Okay. And then you're obviously trying to land as flat foot as possible to try to
Right.
minimize kind of the impact either on your heel or the balls of your feet. So,
Exactly.
yeah, okay.
Exactly.
All right. And then the Newnan Hills. So after Wellesley, you hit up Newton, and then like I guess from 16 all the way up until 21, there's like a gradual incline. And I think it jumps up to 200 elevation from
Yeah.
there. Yeah.
It's the Newton Hills. There are four separate hills. And Heartbreak, of course, is the last. It's the longest. It's the I think the most elevation in feet. But it is something I think because as runners you've always heard about Heartbreak Hill, like it's out there, it's coming, and mentally it's intimidating. So by the time you do hit it, you're just like, okay, I'm actually going to try to assault Heartbreak Hill. And it's tough because you've run all that way, you're now at 20 miles. But you're in Newton. Both sides of Heartbreak Hill are just crammed with spectators, and they're cheering you on, they're trying to pull you up the hill. But it's tough, and I just sort of have to tell myself, all right, I have to go into basically first gear, just forget my pace and just get up the hill. And then right at the top of the hill is Boston College, and they've come out. The students have come out, and I'll just be honest, they've been drinking for a while. So they're even more boisterous than any of the fans across I think the entire course, but they're in good spirits for obvious reasons.
What's more intense, the BC section or the Wellesley section of the race?
I'm going to go with BC. I mean, Wellesley happens at the halfway point, so you're
Yeah.
not really, you're still feeling okay. I mean,
Yeah.
I think it's just before the halfway point, but with Wellesley, you hear the scream tunnel. I remember hearing it maybe a half mile away, and I just turned to the guy next to me, I said, "Is that Wellesley?" And he just nodded at me, and they are there and they are allowed. But I think BC is because you summited Heartbreak Hill. You're at 21, 22 miles, and you just got a little while to left, but you are just spent, and they are screaming at you to keep going. And I just remember running through BC, and they just were so loud, and I started pumping my fists, and they started getting louder. And I just thought, oh, thank you, God, I needed that.
All right. Oh, I'm excited to look for that. And then, so that's up the noon, I guess by 21, that's when you start, I guess, the decline now to get into the city of Boston. Okay. Yeah.
And it's really interesting because you hit Heartbreak. You're still kind of you in most of that race, you're just in little towns, neighborhoods. I mean, Heartbreak Hill, you're running through kind of a neighborhood, and then you hit DC, and all of a sudden the city landscape just changes. And you go from a neighborhood just right into a city. It happens so fast. You're almost sudden like, whoa, where did that come from?
Okay, so that's around Chestnut Hill, Brookline, I guess, where it
Yep.
starts turning into more of the city. And then, yeah,
Yeah.
then you're zooming through. What is that? I forgot the street that you run. Is it Commonwealth or something? Or
So you come on Commonwealth, you run up that's Heartbreak Hills. You're running up Commonwealth, but you run past BC and you take a right down into Cleveland Circle, and you get onto, I believe it's Beacon Street for a little while.
okay.
And that takes you through Brookline, takes you through Coolidge Corner, and then takes you to Kenmore Square, which is about a little over a mile from the finish. But you're right near Fenway Park, and all the Red Sox fans have come out after the game. The tradition is that the Red Sox always play a very early start on Marathon Monday. Their game actually starts at 11 in the morning.
Ooh.
So by the time the game is over, all the fans have come out and they're cheering you on across Kenmore Square. And at that point, I think you've come across Beacon and you get back on the Commonwealth.
Okay, and then you just wrap it up, right before the end. I forgot where I don't remember the name of
Sure.
the part of town where the finish line is.
So it's Copley Square. I mean, you run through
Copley
Kenmore.
Square,
And
that's right.
this is where I honestly, I remember being in just, I would just like, I don't know if I could finish this thing. Because you run down Commonwealth. And then right before you make the right on Hereford, there's this little, you go off to the left and you run under what's called the Tommy Leonard Bridge, which... I mean, on any day you'd look at it and you'd think, oh, okay, no problem. But it's just this little incline that you have to run up. And I remember just really getting really angry of why somebody would have designed the course for that little incline. Like, why is this here? It makes no sense. But I sort of had to kind of, you know, I kind of fast walked it up there because I was just exhausted. But then you get to what, you know, every Boston marathoner loves this phrase, is it's right on Hereford, left on Boylston. And that's where, you know, that's where I think, Brian, I can't wait for you to experience that, where you can just soak it in, that you're going to finish the Boston Marathon. And it's the, you know, it's that phrase, it's, which are absolutely just packed with people, you know, I just remember being, it's so loud that how could you not, you know, just, you know, ignore every pain, every ounce of fatigue that your body is saying you have, ignore all that because they're pushing you across the finish line. That was just the moment I will never forget.
Well, I can't wait to experience that. Oh gosh. Okay. Man, this sounds so exciting just to be a part of this. Okay. Let's talk about some other important stuff, weather. And so I think we had talked about that. It looks like it'll be probably partly cloudy, sunny that day. But there's, you've said in the past, there's chances of it being really bad weather.
The classic saying is it, they've run it in downpours, they've run it in snow, they have run it on unseasonably hot days. But right now, and I'm only checking the weather, you know, 3 or 4 times a day.
Totally.
Why wouldn't I do doing that? Right now we're looking at about a high of 63 and a low of 49. So
okay.
So yeah, it looks like kind of what we had in CIM.
Okay. But we're obviously starting like 4 hours after the time we ran CIM. So
yeah,
it's probably going to be on the warmer side. So
yeah,
high 50s, low 60s, I'm guessing,
mm-hmm.
by the time we start. Okay. Okay.
Yep.
And then clothes. I know we made fun of us wearing singlets a little bit, but in terms of like clothes, what's your normal go-to? Like, what are you going to wear that day?
If that's going to be the weather, I mean, I saw earlier that it might be in the low 50s, but it's changed a little bit since then. At that point, I'll probably just wear just shorts and a t-shirt. I think, you know, anything else will be too warm.
Yeah, probably the same here. And then your shoes of choice again. I know you wear Brooks, but I can't remember the...
I've been wearing my Brooks Beast. I just got a new pair this past week. So I've been breaking those in for Boston.
Same thing. I got a pair of Brooks Glycerin GTS. So like a similar bouncy shoe, but with like more the guide railing. And I just broke them in yesterday. So I'll be running a little bit in this week and then wearing them definitely for the race. I'm excited for it. And one thing I actually, you know, all the history of this race, from everything from like what Bobby Gibb to the Catherine Switzer to it being started, you mentioned it was like the oldest continuous running race, marathon race, right? Over its years. And this is the 128th version.
128th running. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. This sounds so exciting. I didn't realize this, but it was inspired after the 1896 Summer Olympics in Greece. So
yeah,
that's crazy. All right. Well, we'll talk more about kind of the race, in a few weeks, probably in 2 weeks time when we kind of wrap up our post race with Missy and myself and Tim. But any last things you want to bring up on this race, Tim, before we sign off today?
I just hope you get to enjoy it as much as possible.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I I'm thrilled that I get to do it with you in Missy, so that years from now I can look back on it and just say, hey, we got to run Boston.
Oh yeah. Well, I thank you for the opportunity myself. So you've this was awesome that you're able to include us in this whole experience. So no, I appreciate that 110%. Okay. All right. Well, I'm looking forward to this whole thing. We'll probably have another episode in about 2 weeks' time. Oh, Tim, I got to ask you. I know we don't do predictions on football games, but what do you? It's always, I think, for racing, it's okay to talk about, like, what are you going for in terms of time? What do you think your body can handle, and that type of thing, before we wrap up?
We'll see. I think I'm in better shape than the last time I ran Boston, and the last time I ran Boston, I did 4:46. If I beat that time, I'll be happy.
Yeah. I'm hoping to run this storied race at around less than 10 minutes per mile, which is 4:20-ish, 4 hours and 20-ish. So that's kind of my goal. And if I can beat that, great. If I can't, well, that's okay too. But at least I'll be running this awesome race with you. So, cool. All right. Well, if there's anything else, we just, give us a review, give us a like, give us some thoughts or feedback. But thanks everyone for dialing in, and I mean for listening in, and we will talk soon. Good luck, Tim.
Good luck, Brian.
All right. Talk to you later.